Hello, everyone. Welcome to Open the Pod Bay Doors. My name is Clayton Stow, and I'm going to be your host today. I'm one of the co-founders of Innovation Bay, along with Ian Gardner. This podcast is brought to you by Innovation Bay. We're a global network of tech founders, investors, and connectors, and our aim is to support founders on their journey from idea to IPO and beyond. We've been doing this a long time, since 2003, and we're active with over 5,000 members. Now, if you're interested in connecting, learning, and building relationships with other tech founders and investors, check us out and become a member. You can apply for membership at innovationbay.com. Now, today we're talking to Mike Klein, who is the US Consular General for Victoria, South Australia, and Tasmania. Mike has made a career out of being in the US Foreign Service and has worked in a bunch of different locations, including South Korea and Southeast Asia. He is extremely passionate about the startup tech space and has launched a podcast, 37 Degrees Latitude, where he interviews a range of Aussie tech founders who have lived in the US, from people like Nick Crocker to Pat Llewellyn and a range of others. He will also be shortly releasing season 2, where he interviews Aussies currently in the US. This is a great resource for us to have, and I highly recommend a listen for people that are thinking about going over. There's a lot of great scar tissue in these podcasts about lessons people have learned and are learning about expanding into the US market. And why is that important? You know, for me, it represents a very special relationship that we have with the US. I'm not sure how many people realize, but we have our own visa class, which is called the E3. This gives us a very unique and special relationship to be able to expand and get a job over there, to launch your business over there, and not have to worry about the difficulty of getting a visa. We don't chew all the E3s that they provide, where they provide around 10,000 a year. So it's a pretty simple process, and there's a whole bunch of content on the web about how to apply for it, or you can email the US consulate if you're thinking about going over. It does represent, though, a very unique opportunity for Aussies to launch their business in the US, which is one of the reasons why we wanted to do this podcast. Now, this is important in my mind for not only things like knowledge development, working in what is the world's largest and most advanced economy, but also how to access great talent and capital. We all know that Silicon Valley is the home of venture capital, and there is a wealth of opportunity to go over there and raise. So I'm a big proponent of recommending that Aussies should spend a time or a period of time in the US, especially while we have this E3 visa, because it may not last forever. There are some people that don't think that's a great idea. They think that we should think about retaining talent. That's not a big issue for me, because Australia is clearly a much better place to live. And from my experiences, the majority of Aussies always come home. So it's like an advanced MBA, but you kind of come out with not only greater knowledge around how to build and scale a product and a business in this massive market, but also a range of contacts and networks. And more importantly, a much broader view of what's possible, which America is very special at sort of incentivizing. So I really love talking to Mike and learning a little bit more about what he's doing in Melbourne and what he's doing to drive the relationship between Australia and the US. So let's get into it. Talk to Mike Klein. Mike Klein, welcome to Open the Pod Bay Doors.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You're the first consular general that we've had on the show, so I'm excited to be going in this new direction.
So why'd you wait so long?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we've tended to focus on the founder investor side, and now it's really good to get other perspectives. I actually just did a podcast with Claire O'Neill, if you know Claire at all, which is the first time. Well, we actually did do Ed Husic about 3 years ago. He's a great guy. Uh-huh. But so it's good to get different perspectives. Now, the first thing I wanted to kick off is, really, you're the US Consular General for Melbourne, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about you and your role.
Well, my role is to promote trade, promote investment, promote the US-Australia relationship.
Yeah.
And I arrived in Melbourne in summer of 2018. And I got here and, you know, kind of the backstory is my house wasn't ready. And right. So I was put up in a kind of an executive suite sort of situation downtown with my family in the CBD. I go to work at our consulate in St. Kilda during the day. And then the evenings, I'd walk around with my family in downtown Melbourne, ride the tram with the kids. And I was just soaking it in and seeing how much youth and energy and diversity was in Melbourne. Mm. And it just blew me away. And at the same time, during that period when I was just arriving, I was going to a lot of Welcome to Melbourne Consul General events. And the people I was meeting in those events were lovely, great people, but they were all fading about 100 years old. And they were all like, you know, the pillars of the community, but yeah. They were of a certain demographic that just didn't seem to match all the people I saw in the streets when I was walking around Melbourne during the evenings after work and during the day.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to fix that. And so I really quickly set about this plan to go methodically through the city, neighborhood by neighborhood. We'd set up these coffees with people, young people in Richmond and Fitzroy and Carlton and St. Kilda and Broadmeadows. And we'd find somebody that we know in these places. Right. And we'd ask them, we'd tell them there's a new consul general in town. He wants to meet you in your neighborhood. And he wants to meet five people that he hasn't met yet. And I'd go out and I'd sit and I'd have these conversations with young people all over the city. And we talk about all sorts of different things, but one theme kept coming up and it was remarkably consistent. In this group, these groups of five or six young people, there would always be someone who was founding a business or wants to found a startup. And it would be something like fintech or cyber tech or space tech or ag tech or something like that. And it just kept coming up over and over and over and again. And I saw, you know, that's where I need to be. If I'm going to be promoting investment, trade, and the U.S.-Australia relationship, I need to connect these young people with Silicon Valley and Boston and Austin and all these great entrepreneurship ecosystems in the U.S. And that's really kind of set my journey for the past few years.
Yeah, awesome. Well, look, you know, I got to hang out with Nigel Warren in San Francisco a lot, and he was the Consulate General for Australia, for those who don't know, for a period of time, and he was really instrumental in bringing the community together. And I know it's a bit different here because it's more about helping Aussies kind of head off into the US, you know, where Nigel was very focused on kind of helping bring the Australian community together a bit in San Francisco, which was quite large at the time. And I'm sure it still is. Yeah. But before we jump into that sort of stuff, you've been in is the right word diplomatic corps? I mean, I don't know how to phrase it. Yeah. And I noticed.
Exactly. Diplomatic corps, foreign service.
Yeah. The foreign service. And you've been in that for a while now, right? And you've had a bunch of different postings. I noticed like South Korea and Japan. Is that right?
Not Japan, but South Korea twice.
Yeah.
And Laos and Vietnam and Kosovo earlier on.
That's right. Yeah.
You're making me feel old, Faden.
No. Well, I was going to ask you, you know, how do you find Melbourne compared to those other localities, you know, to your previous point about, you know, finding it vibrant?
All these jobs are very, very different. I go in when we go out as a foreign service officer, you go to these different jobs and different roles and different capacities. And I've just been really fortunate to work in a series of different relationships, working on different issues with great people and having great counterparts.
Yeah.
And here in Melbourne, it's the same thing. I work with great people in the U.S. mission. I have great counterparts in the local government and federal government. And wherever you go, you look for issues where you can make an impact. And the U.S.-Australia relationship is unlike any I've seen before, just in its maturity and its depth and its you know, just solidity. And so that's a bit of a challenge when you're the new person in town and you think like, how can I make such a great thing even better?
Yeah.
And that's where I started to narrow in on the startup ecosystem, because a lot of, you know, a lot of the diplomatic corps, I shouldn't make generalizations, but a lot of the work that we've done in the past has been with big companies,
right?
You know, like 3M, Citi, Lockheed, Boeing, companies that literally have been in Australia for over 100 years. And there's not that much that the new consul general in Melbourne can do to tell them about their business. They're doing fine.
Yeah.
But it's for the younger folks. That's where I wanted to focus. And so here, like these other assignments, I'm just trying to figure out where I can make a difference.
Yeah. Awesome. And what drew you into the foreign service in the first place? Like what was that calling? I've noticed that you did a TEDx talk, I think I listened to, on democracy, which was awesome.
Thank you. I've just had felt a real calling for public service from a young age. My father was with the U.S. Agency for International Development right after World War II, and he spent a lot of his career in Europe during the Marshall Plan and some exciting times overseas.
Yeah.
When I graduated from college, I wasn't thinking that broadly, to be honest, and I just did what a lot of other people did at the time, and that is go to graduate school. And so I went from college to law school, and then I went from law school to a big law firm. And somewhere about 5 or 6 years into that, you know, I just didn't feel that career was, I was making the sort of impact that I wanted to make. And I started spending a lot more time with my dad And his eyes would light up when he'd talk about his time overseas and the impact that the United States can make abroad for the good. And that's where I thought maybe that's a time for a pivot in my life. Yeah. That's where I went to the Foreign Service.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, fantastic. You've started this podcast, 37 degrees, which is all about the fact that Melbourne and San Francisco are on this same latitude.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing. And so you've interviewed a bunch of interesting founders. I noticed Kate's on there, Pat Llewellyn's on there, Didier's on there, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't even get Didier on the show. So you have to tell me a bit of secrets about how to get Didier because he keeps dodging me, but we'll get him eventually. And so where's this passion come from for the startup community, I guess?
Because it's an area that I think is low-lying fruit for the U.S.-Australia relationship. Right. You know, it's an area that is so important but has so much room for upside growth.
Yeah.
And the more, you know, the more culture amps that we can collectively create between the United States and Australia, the better it is for both countries. It creates jobs, creates opportunities, it pushes the boundaries of tech and what's possible in a way that benefits both countries. And to kind of stumble into this, because that's what it was, you know, wandering around town, talking to people, just realizing there's so much potential here.
Yeah.
And maybe it's, I'm just here at the right time where we start to have this critical mass of entrepreneurs, critical mass of investors. We're not quite there yet on that, but my sense is there are a lot more people interested in investing in the startup community now than there were in the past. And a critical mass of people with experience. That's the network of kind of sage, old, wise men and women who have been there and back and can tell how it's done.
Yeah.
And with all of these connections going on and to be honest, people like you, Faden, who are kind of spreading the knowledge around and, you know, it just feels like this is a moment. And more recently, the idea that with the pandemic, kind of starting to erase geographic boundaries, you know, that's terrific news for if you live and work in a place like Melbourne, Australia, Tasmania.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, I think a lot of Aussies don't realize how lucky we are in some ways that we've got our own visa class. You know, the E3 is pretty special, right? And it's really helped drive a lot of traffic over to the US.
Come up over and over in these interviews. You know, when I try to kind of deconstruct how these founders did it.
Yeah.
You know, the E3 comes up all the time, and it should. It's among the U.S. work visas. It's probably the easiest to get, the fastest, easiest to apply for.
Yeah.
And it's only for Aussies. They're about 10,500 a year. We never give out all of them.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And so, it's a resource that the successful founders are using to get to the US.
I think Pat Llewellyn was illegal over there for a while. I'm not sure if you followed up with him, but I'd highly suggest that you look into that and investigate that. But no, on a serious note, you know, do you think that now with COVID, I mean, I guess the two things that we're seeing at the moment, interesting trends this year, obviously COVID, people have stopped traveling a little bit or a lot. We've seen a lot of Aussies come back out of the US. You know, again, it feels like the US is going through just changes. But also we've seen the venture industry in Australia kind of grow, you know, and we've seen Square Peg and Blackbird and Airtree all raise, you know, very large funds, which is starting to fund the startup ecosystem. So how are you looking at maybe post-COVID, how things are going to evolve?
I see it like a flywheel, Faden. I just see this picking up, accelerating and going forward faster and faster and faster.
Yeah.
And all these things are feeding into it with whether it's successful founders that are moving back from the States, like Nick Crocker was on my show.
Yeah.
And he's a great example of somebody who went to the States as a founder, came back as an investor at Blackstone. And more and more people like that are feeding money, expertise, talent, wisdom into the community. And like people say, COVID is just accelerating all sorts of trends by 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're seeing that we'll see that with the startup ecosystem here in Victoria.
And the E3 is obviously here to stay for a while. I think that I did hear some connotations that it might be changing, but I've not seen anything change.
I haven't seen anything about it changing.
That's
for Congress to decide. But for now, it's a great resource. It's, you know, we had to shut down a lot of our visa work over the pandemic at the consulate.
Right.
But the E3s are back and we're issuing again. And so if anyone's listening out there and is thinking about it, they should pursue it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy, great situation we have, given how hard it is to get a visa in the US in general. And the fact that we've got this and we don't even use all of them. So it's a great podcast. I really enjoyed 37 Degrees and you interviewed some super interesting people. What were the insights there for you in terms of what did you, because everyone that you interviewed had lived in America, hadn't they? And then had come back. And that was the commonality of the theme.
That's the commonality of season one. Everyone's been in the US and come back. Season two is coming up where we are interviewing people who are still in the United States.
Awesome.
And because I saw with the interviewing, there were people are calling themselves boomerangs, I guess, coming out and back. And so I wanted to talk to people who are there at the bend of the boomerang, who are still out there and hearing, you know, what it's like on the ground now. And so that's season two coming up.
Awesome.
But the common themes that came up, even if you're talking to people who have all sorts of different backgrounds, and the diversity of the backgrounds was something amazing in itself with, like Martin Hosking, former diplomat, and Nick, lawyer, we have a doctor, all sorts of different backgrounds, different sectors of industry, and kind of different experiences. But the themes that kept coming up were, one, network, and how much of a ready network is available when you land in the United States as an Australian, whether it's organized through the Aussie Founders Network or more loosely just Australians around, the network of entrepreneurs. Mm. And time after time, I'm hearing these accounts of how helpful even strangers are in the US. When you land, you've got an idea, people want to help you. Mm. And that was just a theme that kept coming up. So that network was there. Two was culture. Really interesting viewpoints of the cultural experience. And I forgot who mentioned it. I think it might've been Martin. He said that when Australians go overseas to most countries, it takes 6 months to get over culture shock. And then when they go to the US, it takes 6 months for them to realize they're in culture shock, because the US and Australia have these cultures that, you know, there's a lot of overlap. And so it feels familiar, but there's some real differences too.
Yeah.
And they come to the surface pretty quickly if you're trying to pitch for business in the US or find investors. Yeah. And we talked a lot in many of these podcasts about tall poppy syndrome, which I never heard about before coming to Australia, but I heard about it all the time when I was having these coffees around town with young people, and the idea that it's not quite socially acceptable in Australia to point out to your achievements, to try to succeed above other people. And in that was holding some of these young people back that I would talk to. So it was fascinating to talk to the entrepreneurs who had been to the US, and they'd explain that it melts away when you go overseas and you have much more of a culture of helping each other out and supporting each other and giving each other a lift.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting. Another part of culture that kept coming up was the sense of self-deprecation that a lot of Aussies have, which is a beautiful part of the culture.
And sarcasm. It just doesn't work over there, does it? I don't know why. Why does it not work over there?
And it's something that some of my guests are really direct about. And they said, for Australians that go over to the United States, you need to tone down the self-deprecation.
Yeah.
If Americans hear you downplay your achievements, they'll believe you. Americans aren't that subtle. And so it's important for Australians to amp up the ambition and talk about how they've got the greatest idea in the world and it's going to change the universe and really power up on the ambition. Mm. And I think Nick Crocker said this, and he said, regardless of how much a Australian amps up their sense of ambition or how they portray it, it's still going to be probably about the level of, you know, a lot of your American founders, or below the level of a lot of American founders. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be uncomfortable, but that's the approach that people take when you're surrounded by that environment. So that came up a lot, and I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But then last theme that kept coming up a lot in these interviews was the element of what appears to be chance. Hmm. Like an opportunity that comes up from a stray conversation at a conference, or I'm talking to somebody in an airplane seat next to me, or even in Didier's example, he got his first big clients picking up his daughter at daycare or something like that. Yeah, you know, it just seems like these random encounters lead to big opportunities. But it's really not random in that these founders all had in common that they put themselves out there. They were out and circulating, and as somebody had the phrase of increasing the surface area of serendipity, of just trying, of creating the opportunities for these chances to evolve. And that's what led to opportunity.
It's really funny.
So that kept coming up.
Yeah, it's really funny you say that. And I don't know whether you've noticed that now being in Australia, but what I found was that there was, in Australia, there's a very significant separation between work and home. You know, and you know, when you're socializing outside of work, it's not work. But in the US, I think those two are very intertwined. You know, and you're always talking about what you're doing because what you're doing is a passion, and it's not kind of work in some ways. It's just who you are. It's part of your identity. Where in Australia, it's less so in that sort of way. So I think to your last point, what I found is there was a consistent flow of opportunities. The more opportunities than you can point a stick at in the US, because everyone's looking for opportunities constantly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And to do stuff all the time and to do business where you're bumping, you're picking your kids up and, you know, whatever school you go to is a part of business in some ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Know,
so for better or for worse, that's kind of the way it works there.
Yeah.
And I think that should be encouraging to, and again, I'm still thinking that audience in my head of the group of five or six young people sitting around a cafe in Fitzroy and they're thinking, well, do I have what it takes to do it? And I just say, God, yes, you know, just try it. And yes, the US is hard, it's far, it's complex. But if you pick yourself up, put yourself into that environment, and if you've got a good idea, you can get in front of people and these chances are going to come. And it's, you can do it.
You got to go for it. Yeah, definitely. And I think some people in Australia feel like, you know, stay here. You know, we don't need Aussies. We don't need a brain drain going across the US. But, you know, I feel like there is that boomerang scenario where you go across, and America is an amazing place. You know, I think anyone who spent time there, I'm sure would love it in a number of different ways. But eventually, nearly 90% of all Aussies come back. And I think that is because Australia is a pretty exceptional place in its own right. You know, it's your roots.
It sure is. But there's also room for flexibility in – and Kate Kendall talks about this in our conversation, how if you're flexible with your workforce, it's possible to have the best of both.
Yeah.
And between the remote technologies and just more acceptance of having a workforce spread around the world, you can have, you know, technical people here in Australia who are every bit as good as they are in the US, and they aren't demanding the same sort of wages that Facebook and Google call for. And you can compete at a whole different level if you spread your workforce around. And so you could be in the US and Australia and wherever else at the same time.
It's a global economy in many ways. So what advice do you give? You're bumping into a bunch of young entrepreneurs, so to speak, right? And what advice would you give them about, I'm thinking about going to the US, not sure yet, you know, what would you say?
First thing is just don't be afraid to ask for help.
Right.
You know, it just seems that this is an uncommonly supportive community. I think here in Victoria of entrepreneurs, the resources that are available of officially through like Launch Vic and Startup Vic and through the incubators and accelerators in town. If you plug in, people want to see you succeed. Mm. And not every idea is a great one, but there are enough people around who are willing, I think, to share advice to give people a steer. And so they're not going to go all the way to the US and take a terrible idea out there and just get hit by a buzzsaw. There's enough resources here to develop an idea to the point where you can get to the US. And then that's where it'll go rapid fire, fast forward, and get to a point where investors will put money into it or it's market ready. It's just a question of having the courage to step through that first step.
Yeah.
Then I think there are a lot more opportunities out there than people think.
Yeah. And what do you think you've got to be, again, what sort of, where should you be at in terms of stage of evolution? And what about, what advice would you give to people on how they should perceive maybe the first 6 months?
Something that came up a lot in the interviews was thinking globally from the start.
Yeah.
And the idea that building up a business in Australia first and then going to the United States as a strategy might not be the best for all situations. Mm. If you're thinking about going globally from the start, it's important to get those early US contacts and clients. So develop the idea here, go to the US and start shopping pretty early is what I've seen from the people I've spoken with anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that Australia is a bit of a demo market in some ways. You know, we've got a small population base. You know, the Excel guys said to me, we love Aussies because you guys always think globally from day one because you live on this little remote island in the middle of nowhere, you know, and we always struggle to get our entrepreneurs to think outside of America. And so, you know, there's lots of great attributes around Australian businesses. And definitely while I was there, we saw, you know, young people coming over, you know, in their 20s, trying to launch something that was super early. And then definitely some later stage founders who had, you know, developed product market fit and where they're looking to the US to scale. You know, we've got a Innovation Bay runs a Series A sort of plus stage founder club and great companies. Most of them, all of them have strong product market fit. All of them are scaling. All of them have customers in the US. And for businesses like that, you know, how do you think they should think about expansion, further expansion into America?
One thing I really liked that a couple of these founders used was to look at the portfolio companies of the investors that they're looking to market to.
Right.
And if you can get the portfolio companies on board with a product or service or whatever you happen to be doing and have the investors you want hear about you from their portfolio companies, that is one of the surest ways to get to the next level when you start looking for serious rounds of investment.
Yeah.
Or for the next, I'll say serious, but the next round of investment.
Yeah.
And
Pat Llewellyn did really well at that, didn't he? Like, you know,
exactly. I was just going to say, you know, having 99 Designs be kind of the source of so many different logos of startups in Silicon Valley, all the investors would ask people that are pitching them, hey, where'd that logo come from? Oh, I got it from the 99 Designs. Wow, that sounds really cool. And then Patrick comes in like, hey, I'm 99 Designs. You know, things went pretty quickly from there.
Yeah.
And so getting that reputation out through the portfolio companies is a great step.
Yeah.
I still think having a beachhead in the US is real important. Having that office in the United States in the time zone is really, really important. And it kind of goes a little bit what I said before about geographic barriers breaking down, but I think it's important, especially in the early stages, that American investors or customers or clients know they can pick up the phone and talk to somebody in a reasonable time zone. Yeah.
Where are you originally from in the US?
I grew up in Bethesda, Maryland, just outside of Washington.
Okay, awesome. And so tell me, where do you go? What advice do you give? Because we've got this crazy scenario where we don't have 50 states, but we have, you know, it's probably three states that really kind of tend to compete against each other in terms of, you know, where the best tech ecosystem, you know, Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane in some ways.
Yeah. It's in the US, it's an exciting time now because the geography is shifting really, really fast. Well, not shifting, but it's morphing because like 5 or 10 years ago, it was pretty clear if you wanted investors, you had to go to Silicon Valley. If you were in media, that New York is probably the place to go. Med, you know, you want to be around Boston, perhaps. So you had limited options and they're all great options, but expensive and you're competing. You're going to be paying top dollar for talent.
Yeah.
Right now, you're seeing that geography is morphing where there are lots of smaller cities, whether it's Austin or Boulder or, you know, Seattle's probably closer to San Francisco at this point.
Yeah.
But places like Nashville and lots of different places in the US that are starting to see these different the clusters of tech getting stronger and stronger. Some of that is driven by COVID. Some of it's just driven by the technology that you can do it now.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of choices. And fundamentally, you want to be near where your investors and clients and customers are. But I think there's more flexibility now. So it really depends on taste.
So how do you help that? You know, so I say I'm coming to you and, hey, Mike, I've got a small company, 20 people. I'm going to relocate with my family over to America. You know, where should I go?
It would depend on what sort of company it is.
Yeah.
So if it is, let's say it's health tech.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing a lot of health tech companies coming out of Victoria.
Melbourne's really known for it, isn't it?
They're
doing a great job driving that. Yeah, a lot of med tech businesses.
So certainly can't go wrong in Silicon Valley. But if you want to give an option to for maybe a little bit less and lower expenses, a little bit, you know, and think about Austin.
You know,
Houston. You know, huge health tech scene there. Plenty of investors, plenty of customers. And again, you just have more flexibility with the remote technology to get investors and get clients regardless of where you are.
Yeah.
So you might have a cousin in Nashville. And it's like, go to Nashville. You could probably do that too.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes, you know, you've already got customers over there. So go where your customers are potentially. Mm-hmm. But I guess also where you can access the type of talent that you want. There are kind of, I always thought of the US, it's almost like 50 little countries in a country and sometimes, you know. And Austin's a bit different to Denver and obviously very different to San Francisco. And like you sort of said, Boston obviously is really known for that kind of MIT, deep tech, med tech sort of space, AI, robotics, that sort of thing, you know.
Exactly.
And it definitely seems the capital markets, you know, where they were very consolidated in San Francisco have now definitely moved out. You know, people like Tom Humphreys in Denver, who's a great Aussie. We did a podcast with him too, you know, in a VC firm there. It does seem a bit more diversified.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it really seems that 10 years ago, if, you know, an investor is not going to invest in you unless they could go down and have coffee with you down the street.
Yeah.
And, you know, with COVID, that's certainly not the case anymore.
Yeah.
And at that point, it doesn't really matter if you're in the Valley or in Fitzroy, you know, you can still set up that Zoom call and make it happen.
Yeah, the deals are happening now, right, over Zoom. So how do you find Melbourne? Because, you know, we look at Melbourne and we go, what LaunchVic have done, what StartupVic have done, you know, been really amazing in many ways. And they've definitely, it feels like they've created the most healthy ecosystem in Australia.
It's terrific. You know, I don't have the past to compare it with, and I haven't spent much time elsewhere in Australia even.
Yeah.
Or I should say, I'm here in Melbourne. My consular district is South Australia, Victoria, Tasmania, and Northern Territory.
Oh, awesome.
And there's definitely pockets of innovation all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I see here in Melbourne is just tremendous. And again, it's just that combination of getting the critical mass of investors, entrepreneurs, and networks of people who know how to get things done.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to create an effect where it's going to accelerate.
And so, Mike, what sort of services would you provide to a founder, if any?
Well, like one of the first things I did once I came across this idea of jumping into to see what I could do to add value was to send a couple of great founders and an investor also to the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in The Hague last year, which is something, one of the big high profile US government initiatives to bring founders and investors from all over the world together in a different place around the world. And we've never sent anyone from Melbourne. They've been people from Sydney that have gone, but I wanted to make sure that Melbourne was represented at the GEC so that the global community could have a sense hearing from their own voices about what's going on in Melbourne to put Victoria on the map and have the investors out there asking smart questions, the founders with great ideas and global ambition and global ideas and global vision. So making sure that here in Victoria, we're on the radar globally. Mm-hmm. Second thing I've been doing is to try to look for opportunities where investors are coming in, perhaps to Victoria, perhaps not to invest, but for the Australia Open or the Melbourne Cup or these different events that draw people.
Yeah.
And once we start looking for it, there are a lot of people that come in from Silicon Valley or New York or Boston for these great events that could take place in Victoria. So what we did was start reaching out to investors or people who just happen to be in town for something else and say, hey, do you have an extra hour or two where you can meet with some founders or some entrepreneurs and hear what they're up to, maybe give a little bit of advice. And again, people are willing to help if you ask.
Mm.
And so we've had some success in in making those connections. And then that led to the podcast, because I wanted to create something that was a little bit more of an enduring resource to folks who are interested in getting almost an executive MBA in scaling to the US. And that's what I'm trying to create, something that's off the shelf or off the podcast anyway. And a resource for entrepreneurs to hear directly from people who have done it before what works and what doesn't work.
Super interesting, right? Because, you know, in the little Aussie kind of community that's maybe lived in the US a little bit, there's been a lot, you know, people have talked a bunch of times about how do we provide a better bridge to the US? You know, there was one person, I can't remember, he was out of Melbourne, and I've forgotten his name, that's terrible, but he was almost running a VC firm that was looking to invest only in companies that were looking to make the transition across. You know, and Amanda at KPMG is trying to focus on this area. It's one of the kind of key areas. Like, how do we provide a range of services for companies that are then going to think about migrating from helping them set up their businesses from a legal point of view and a compliance point of view to helping them build the strategy on where they should locate themselves and how do they kind of build the right talent pipeline up? Because it is a very different kind of talent market in the US.
Yes.
And so is that something that you're considering, you know, helping with that, or is that too hands-on? And I don't know, where are the limits, I guess?
That probably is about the limit. I see my role. I mean, we were joking at the beginning about why you haven't had consuls general on before. It's because we haven't really done this before.
Yeah,
fair. This is kind of a new ground for what this role is. And what I wanted to do is create a platform to provide the sort of knowledge base resources. So people that talk to me either on the podcast or in these live events to create information that they can go off and run with in the right direction.
Yeah.
And then if that creates opportunities for others out there to help give them that final push, that's great.
Awesome. That makes total sense. Do you get a lot of US folk coming over? I mean, there must be things like the Melbourne Open and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it just crushes me that travel has stopped because there are so many people that come over for the big events in Victoria, and also family. You know, there are a lot of family connections that are that bridge the United States and Australia.
Yeah,
and just it doesn't take that much to just plant the seed of, hey, you're in town visiting whoever, why don't you take an extra 45 minutes to meet with some investors or some entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And
makes a lot of sense, you know, doesn't it? Because we have seen, I think, you know, and maybe it's just a perception thing, but it doesn't feel like the volume of US capital it has been flowing into Australia, you know, because you go back over the last, say, 8 years, this is in the startup space, we saw, you know, CultureAmp and Atlassian Canva. And there was a myriad of companies there that all attracted quite large rounds of investments from, you know, US VC firms. And that seems to have not really been happening of late.
Generally, the US is the largest investor by far in Australia. But you're right, it's not going into the startup space, except for a few exceptions.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'd like to see change. And part of the podcast, I'm hoping we're going to get an audience in the US for people that might not have heard of some of these great companies that are starting down here.
Yeah.
They'll start to take notice and we can create these flows because the investments going in here create companies that scale up. And again, it's truly a win-win, which is why I'm so excited about this project.
Yeah. I mean, it's super exciting. We run a venture capital conference every year and we've done it for the last 3 years. We actually run it in New Zealand. Take all the kind of Australian VCs over, and we've had a few US venture firms that have come over. So we've had Microsoft, and we've had a couple. I've forgotten the name of the CIA VC arm. It'll come back to me in a second. But they operate over here, and they came over for us, and we had Google Ventures out of China come. But, you know, we've approached a lot of US VCs and said, look, there's a great opportunity to come over, share some love and engage. But, you know, it is a bit of a journey. We found it pretty tricky to get them over. How do you think, I'd love to know, you know, any tips on how you think we can incentivize more US venture firms to come over and for an event like that?
it's been, in my short experience doing this, it's just been linking it to the other big events.
Right.
And so they're not going to come to, they're not going to come to a conference that I put on, but they might be here anyway for the Melbourne Cup. And they'd stick around for an extra day to do entrepreneur outreach.
Right. Okay. So we've got to work with maybe Launch Vic and you, and maybe bring something together that could maybe a week of activities to justify the travel.
That'd be fantastic. That'd be fantastic. Yeah. And again, it's fun just to think about when people are traveling again, because that gives me hope. Yeah.
When do you think that's going to happen? What's your prediction?
Gosh, I don't know. Yeah, first I'm thrilled at how successfully Australia has handled the virus.
Yeah,
across the nation here in Victoria, Melbourne being the only major city to beat back a second wave of COVID is just a huge accomplishment. But keeping those wins is going to mean keeping borders pretty tight for a while. So I don't know when the borders really open internationally, but we'll see. We'll see and hope for the best.
You must be working with a bunch of great US tech companies that are over here.
Mm-hmm.
And do you see them growing in Australia? And do you see them expanding their role into the country? Or how do you view that? Because sometimes, you know, what is Australia for a US tech company? It's such a small market. Although SurveyMonkey, I think it was their first market in the world outside of the US. There's a whole bunch of reasons why you'd want to set up here. Dropbox was the same.
From tech companies that I've spoken with, they're impressed by the talent that's here. They can hire here because people want to live in places like Melbourne, where you know the quality of life is so good.
Yeah,
and you know that's a real draw, and it's a lot cheaper than setting up in Silicon Valley, and Australians have they're willing to try new things.
Yeah,
and they're willing to try new things, whether it's fintech or whatever.
Yeah,
it's not a bad place to do business, and I think that's just going to expand. And that's all part of that flywheel effect, because who's working for these tech companies, whether it's Square or whoever?
Yeah.
These are innovators or entrepreneurs who may have had experience in the US and they want to come back to Australia. They're working for an American tech company, but here it's creating almost a hybrid sort of environment. When you visit with some of these companies in their offices, you feel it where it's a little San Francisco. It's a lot Australian, and that's a good combination where you have a little bit maybe more balance than you would have in the U.S. But you also have kind of this sense of drive that you're pulling from the U.S. So it's a good balance.
And are you helping U.S. Nationals come over here in terms of, you know, relocate over here? And are you seeing an increase in that? I would have thought definitely as we see this flux of Aussies kind of coming home, because I mean, you know, US, especially California, has been a hard place to live, right? With just what's gone on from the political scene, but also the bushfires and then COVID, you know, I've definitely had a bunch of friends that have decided to come home.
Yeah. It's hard to say because travel has been so upended right now.
Right.
And really nobody's moving. We had at the beginning of the pandemic, we were helping some tourists mostly who were stranded here, help them get home and just kind of get people to where they needed to be early on. Since then, things have just been, people have been staying put.
Yeah.
And after it's all through, then maybe we'll see some more shifts. But so far, it's hard to say.
Okay. Now, I've got a bit of a, you know, theoretical question for you, because I want to throw it at you. I know you talk on democracy, and I think that's the TEDx talk that we mentioned before.
Yeah.
I guess a few of us, you know, we got into tech and we love tech for the change that it can create, the positive change that it can create. We've obviously seen the negative aspect of things like Facebook in some ways affect how people make decisions and impact political environments. How do you see that? How do you see the relationship between democracies and institution and technology?
It's a great question. And on the one hand, what we've seen so far is a very hands-off approach by U.S. government in particular on tech. And I think that contributed to the incredible innovation that we've seen in the tech industry, perhaps the most impactful innovation we've seen in the history of civilization, you could argue. It's just been incredible.
Yeah.
But more and more people are pointing out the externalities of that, as you've mentioned, whether it's freedom of, whether it's hate speech or pornography or privacy concerns or just disinformation altering.
Yeah.
So now it's coming down to like, now where do we go? And I think that, you know, we're seeing different approaches, like Australia's is getting into the space. Europe is moving into the space. Different states in the U.S., California is starting to work on this. And importantly, the U.S. Congress, you know, is starting to take notice. And you know, we saw the hearings last month on the tech hearings. And we're seeing Congress get more involved. They're asking good questions. They're getting smart on it. And it's bipartisan. They're trying to find the way forward. When what to do with tech that grows big and fast, and we've seen it before. You know, this is for in the mid 1970s. You had the breakup of AT&T, and that's right. Where the United States took an antitrust approach to big tech.
Right.
And then in the 80s, cable networks started getting too strong, too powerful, and we saw a regulatory approach to big tech.
Right.
And now I think we're going to see perhaps a hybrid or who knows, but it's going to be Congress that's looking at it and they're going to see, they have their toolbox that can go with antitrust, they can go with regulatory, or they could continue with kind of self-regulation. But it's going to be up to them to figure out, you know, what's in the best interest.
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be definitely 2021. It's going to be an interesting year for everybody.
It will be. It will be.
So, look, it's been awesome talking to you, and we've got some quick fire questions that we always go on to at the end of the podcast. And I did send them to you, so I hope you've had a chance to have a look at them. But we'll just throw ourselves into them and see where we land. How's that sound?
Sure.
Awesome.
Sure. Sounds good.
So, your favorite book?
Favorite book that I've read recently is called Boys in the Boat.
It's such a good book.
You've read it, right? It's Daniel James Brown about the University of Washington rowing team that beat the heavily favored 1936 Nazi team in the Berlin Olympics. And it's about teamwork, it's about passion, it's about grit, a lot of lessons there beyond rowing. And it's a fantastic book.
Yeah, that is a fantastic book. What about podcast?
I listen to The Daily almost every day.
Yeah.
NPR. The longer form favorites of mine are How I Built This by Guy Raz and also The Tim Ferriss Show.
He's a funny guy. What about news source? Where do you get your news from?
I think it's important to get news from all sorts of different sources. So here in Melbourne, I go to the Herald Sun and the Age, ABC and AFR, SBS. You know, I try to get as much news from different sources as I can.
Yeah.
In the US, it'll be like NPR, New York Times, Post, and flip through Fox too.
Yeah, you got to have that. You got to have a bit of Murdoch in there just to understand what the other side
understand.
Is like. You know, you never quite understand it, but it's good to see it. What about, you must have traveled a lot. I'm looking forward to this one. Best holiday destination for you. Where would that be?
Now, I'm not just saying this because you're in Hobart now, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not just saying this because of that, but I really had a great trip earlier on in this year with my family. And we drove from Launceston to Hobart on the east side of the island. And I'm really hoping to get back down there and drive the rest of the way around. It's a wonderful trip.
Yeah, it's beautiful, Tassie, isn't it, in many ways?
It is.
What about founder, CEO? Have you got one of those? Out of your podcasts, who's your favorite out of that?
I don't want to play favorites among my guests, but I would say somebody that I look to I've been so impressed with over the years has been Brian Chesky with Airbnb. And, you know, you got to take your hats off to a guy who was renting air mattresses in 2007 and from that built a $25 billion company that totally disrupted the travel industry.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing. And also he's had some tough stretches too, including COVID. And each time it seems to meet these challenges with integrity and with good thought and judgment. And so hats off to him.
They haven't listed yet though, but it's in the short-term future, isn't it?
That's what they say, right?
So it's immediate. What about productivity tool? What do you use? What are you allowed to use? Because I'm sure there'd be a bunch of restrictions in there.
You know, there are some restrictions on what we use, and they're fine. You know, we use, especially lately, we've been using Zoom a ton and just Teams and things like that. But something I point to, just what I think has been really helpful personally, has been Headspace. And it's, you know, I know there are a lot of meditation apps out there, but when the lockdown started months ago, I started listening to Headspace, and I felt that just taking that time has really helped focus my attention and kind of helped me focus on things that I can control.
Yeah, awesome.
And that's made me more productive.
Yeah, it's great. I use it every day. It's such an awesome app.
Do you really?
Yep. Yep.
Great.
Fantastic. What about if you're going to do another TEDx talk, what would that one be? And what's the next one on?
So you're not going to let me tell the same one over again.
Huh? No, unfortunately not.
I spoke the first time about democracy, and I would love to give it again because I think I could do a better job this time.
I thought you were good on the first time.
And I still feel strongly about it.
Yeah.
But if I were going to give another TED talk, it would be titled What Australia Taught Me About the Traditional Owners of My Land. And it's really struck me that in almost all events I go to, there is an acknowledgement of the traditional owners of the land. And it struck me because where I grew up and when I grew up, I never heard that, ever. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, why is that? And I started doing some research on like where I grew up or where I live now in Washington.
Yeah.
And the official history of my neighborhood in Washington starts in 1730. Mm-hmm. And that's not right. We know that's not right.
Yeah.
And I think living in Australia has really helped clarify the sense that, you know, there are traditional owners of the land. And that's something that I'm going to take back with me when I go back to the US. And it's something that I would love to have the opportunity to talk about if I could have the chance again with Ted.
Yeah, it's awesome that we've embraced that, you know, so well in Australia and so consistently. People haven't second-guessed it at all. So, okay, now, how do people reach out to you for help?
Reach us at the consulate, and it's easy to find. Just look us up online, and we'd love to keep this connection going. If there are entrepreneurs out there we could talk to.
Awesome.
Love to keep that up.
And so there's a couple of reasons why people would reach out. Do you help them with an E3 visa, or I didn't know the process actually works.
Yeah, they apply at the consulate.
Okay,
they apply at the consulate. Yep. And it's an easy process. I can't offer help to actually do it, but folks that are interested, look online and take advantage of it.
And there's so many Aussies that have done it. It's pretty easy to go out there and, you know, find examples or connect with someone who has done it.
Exactly.
And that's pretty straightforward. And then is there anything else that, you know, people should be reaching out to you for? Just general advice? Have you guys got any events that you're running virtual events or anything in the future? And when does the podcast come out, the new podcast series?
So we're going to finish we've just finished season one. Season two starts right at the beginning of the new year. We're going to take a break for the holidays.
Awesome.
But I do encourage people to tune in there. There's some great lessons learned of these successful entrepreneurs who have connected to American markets and capital and partners, and just the atmospherics of what it's like just to go and give it a go in the U.S. And it's a tremendous resource. I encourage folks to tune in.
Yeah, fantastic. Awesome. Mike, it's been such a great pleasure talking to you. Thanks for all the help you're doing in bridging the gap. And looking forward to having you as part of the ecosystem. How long is your tour in Melbourne for?
It's a 3-year tour total.
Okay. Well, hopefully you'll get to re-up.
I'd love to. Really enjoyed our time here.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Mike.
All right, Finn. And thank you very much.
Awesome.